My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. It has been said by philosophers and seers that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. What does that mean? If it is in fact true, what is our purpose and why are we here? Does it mean that within each of us is profound and timeless knowledge, the potential for doing great good, and the manifestation of what is foundational to every faith and religion, loving and caring for one another? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Stefania Magidson, has lived this path. Stefania was born in Romania and immigrated with her family to the United States in 1983. She received a Bachelor of Science in Health Education and a Master's in Applied Spiritual Psychology. In 2002, she founded the Blue Heron Foundation, one of the largest nonprofit organizations in the Romanian diaspora, focusing on improving the quality of life of Romanian and Moldovan orphaned youth by providing them access to life's opportunities through merit-based college scholarships. To date, the organization has raised more than $2 million, has awarded more than 300 scholarships, and has touched the lives of more than 2,900 young people. Stefania is supporter of the UCLA Graduate School of Education, the Every Child Foundation, and many more educational and philanthropic organizations. You can find out more about her work at blueheronfoundation.org, and she joins me this week to discuss her book, Searching for the White Magician, a series of dialogues where she explores themes ranging from immigration and philanthropy to spiritual psychology and self-realization. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Stefania Magidson. Good morning, Stefania.
Good morning, Victor. I'm so thrilled to be on your show. Thank you for this opportunity.
And Stefania, it's truly an honor for you to be joining us, and I just want our listeners to know that all proceeds from the sale of your book go to the Blue Heron Foundation, so thank you for your open-heartedness and generosity on so many levels.
Well, thank you. And this is the least that I can do. For the past 16 years, I have directed my energy toward this project, and I have never taken a salary. And so it's such a big part of my life. The proceeds of the sales, it's just but a very small symbol of how I go about doing things.
It's an example for all of us of the expression of paying it forward from the beautiful expression of your life and then giving it to others. And so thank you so, so much.
Absolutely.
Now, please tell us about your early life in Romania and what started you on your path.
Well, I was born in 1968. It was right in the middle of the communist era. And on the one hand, I would say my life was fairly privileged for a communist regime, meaning that I had everything that I needed. I had a family, I had loving parents, and there was enough of everything. We left the country in 1983 because my parents felt that they could give us a better future by immigrating. They could give my sister and I a better future. And so it took about 3 years to receive the approval. And so we came here legally, except that because Romania was communist, everything was confiscated from us. Our home was taken away, our citizenship. I remember that my parents exchange money on the black market because you couldn't even do that. So after a lifetime of work, we left with 4 suitcases, $500 exchanged on the black market. And with this, it felt like it was a one-way ticket because during the communist regime, you couldn't really plan on, you didn't know if you could ever return to visit your relatives, your friends, your homeland. And so We arrived in Salt Lake City, Utah. I was 15. And the feeling that I had, Victor, was that the rug had been pulled from underneath me. I was so disoriented, so scared. Nothing made sense anymore. Everything I had known, the language, the culture, my extended family, our social connections, our home, everything was taken away, and I felt very out of balance. I was trying to find my footing, and even though I was a young adolescent, I started to ask some of the deeper questions that people ask in life, such as, who am I beyond the material objects in my life, beyond my home? Who am I beyond what I think is my social standing? Who am I beyond the notions of the cultural notions that I know and the language I speak? And I guess everything pointed me to my inner world and really getting in touch with my spirit, which is timeless and it's beyond any geography and any of those kinds of reference points. And I think I was lucky to come across books such as The Power of the Myth by Joseph Campbell. And I remember reading a couple of books by Swami Rama, an Indian spiritual teacher. And little by little, I started to build this bridge in my new world, in my new life. But I had to do it from the inside. And even though I always intuitively knew that our spirit comes first and is, let's be honest, immortal, this experience that I have was so jolting, and I really came to experience that, to feel it, not just to learn it theoretically. I knew that that is the only part of us that is not defined by all these other points of reference, which change with time, with history, with geography, with changes of regime. And ever since then, I have cultivated a spiritual path, and I'm happy later on to talk to about how I did it later on with my master's degree, which is specifically in applied spiritual psychology. But that, in a nutshell, is the journey of the first 15 years.
Now, how did your family happen to choose Utah? I'm curious about that.
My aunt already lived there. She is even to this day, even though she's quite old by now. She restores paintings. She's very talented at being an art restorer, and she lived there. That's where she had found work in her field, and she sponsored us. It was a very bewildering place to land, but looking back, it was not a bad place because it was inexpensive and safe, and they had good public education. So it was not a bad beginning, even though it was so dissimilar from what I had known.
Not to mention the beauty of the American West, right?
Yes, the mountains around us and all the outdoors activities, which, by the way, again, because it took me so long to adapt, it took me years to discover. It sounds really strange, but it took me years to discover, but it is an incredibly beautiful place, yes.
So what inspired you to write Searching for the White Magician?
I think I got lucky with a friend about 12 years ago. I was at a fundraiser here in New York, and I met a Romanian. She's a journalist, a poet, a screenwriter. I think she writes everything, that any form of writing that there is. And we started talking about the foundation, except that she really loved where I was coming from. She thought my answers were unusual and deeper than what she had expected. So she invited me to write an article about me for a Romanian literary magazine. And then we just had so much back and forth. The one article became four, and then it became 13 articles published in 13 during 13 different months in this literary magazine in Romania. And there was a lot of interest from the public there, and a lot of feedback. And really, we realized at the end of the 13 months that we had a book which delved into topics ranging from philanthropy to spiritual psychology to immigration. There is even a chapter about dreams and a chapter about exploring femininity and feminism. So I think I just got lucky to meet Carmen, who engaged me in a very dynamic dialogue. And this is how the book came about.
Now, writing as a dialogue, or having this exchange with Carmen as a dialogue, how did that enhance the process of creativity?
I love that, because you're not just sitting there saying, this is what I believe and this is what happened to me, therefore this is how things are. You have somebody there to contradict you, to ask you to clarify, to come from a slightly different angle. A friend of mine who has a degree in philosophy said, and I forgot exactly who was, Plato or Socrates, mm-hmm. one of them only wrote in dialogue form.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's just a very dynamic way of having a conversation and exploring ideas, which really worked for me. And I think it's just a great way to write. And I would tell the reader that also each chapter stands on its own, so they can just open the book and just read the chapter about dreams, and another day they can read about something else. So they don't build on each other, they stand on their own, and I think it's fun that way for how we read these days.
My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Stefania Magidson. She's the author of Searching for the White Magician, Spiritual Psychology, and the Manifestation of Destiny. And we'll be back with more of Stefania after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello! Join us, Lisa Berry and Michelle Carter, every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for the Mindset Makeover, What's Possible? Get ready to become present, clear and unstuck, and start living fully, led by your heart, while you listen and feel this transformation through vibration of word, sound, and song. You'll open up to what's possible and experience your shift.
What does Meals on Wheels do? They deliver meals and smiles to homebound seniors. But Meals on Wheels does something else. They turn a volunteer's lunch break into a meaningful experience.
As small and as simple as the relationship is between a volunteer and a client of Meals on Wheels, it's really so impactful. I never thought that 5 minutes could make so much difference in the lives of two people, but it has.
Drop off a warm meal and get more than you expect. Volunteer at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. That's AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. Brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Hello, this is Alec Baldwin for Save the Manatee Club. In an animated TV show, I was the voice of a marine biologist dedicated to saving Florida's imperiled manatees. It was a lot of fun, but there's a serious side, too. Tragically, many of these gentle marine mammals suffer injuries or die from boat strikes, and their habitat is being lost. Manatees need your help. Please call 1-800-432-JOIN or visit www.savethemanatee.org.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week is Stefania Magidson. She's the author of Searching for the White Magician, Spiritual Psychology, and the Manifestation of Destiny. Stefania, so who or what is the White Magician?
I believe that the White Magician is that it's really our higher self. You know, it's the part of us which understands the subtle notions of the universe and is in direct contact with our intuition. And also, I guess, aware of Yeah, the subtle notions of the universe. We can't just make the decisions in our lives based solely on our rational mind. I think it's important over time to dismantle it and to also get in touch with our creative thinking, our visionary thinking. And I would say that's where the white magician comes in. It has helped me develop that part of myself. It has helped me to cultivate that part of myself during my life, because I did end up building sort of a big life and manifesting some of my biggest dreams. And I know that I started from zero when we came here and gave everything up. And I know that I had at least 10 years of incredibly hard work, struggling, so to speak, on Maslow's at the bottom of the pyramid, and just the pure survival level. So it is very important to listen with our inner ear and to make our decisions based from that place. So it's also, I thought it conjured an image of something magical and more tangible to get in touch with that magician inside of us and, you know, pull out our imaginary magic sword and, you know, sort of go for our dreams.
You know, it's interesting that myself and a lot of the people in the communities that I belong to, when they were very young, were very much in touch with that inner magical self. And as adulthood ensued, perhaps put that away or forgot about it for a while, and then reemerged into that in their mid to late 30s. I have so many friends who describe that and have grown accordingly since their mid to late 30s. I just turned 65 earlier this year. So do you think that that's something that is inherent in us as children, and sometimes we forget or we put it away?
It's such an interesting question. Well, I know, because I've been so fascinated and so loved that early stage in our own children's lives, the 0 to 7 years of age. After that, the veil of magic lifts right around second grade, and you find out there are, you know, where kids really come from, and that there is no Santa Claus, and you start making more rational arguments. But you see the magic until then. And then I think we spend a lot of years, a part of us is invested into the nostalgia for that filter of life. But it's also important that we build these other parts of life, of ourselves and our mental abilities. And then I think we return to this question again of, what am I really here to do? Or why am I having such a hard time at work? It doesn't feel like this is my path. I think all the work that we do with the mainstream education, it's all important to gain the skills, to gain the education that we need, but to remember that we use all that in service to our path, in service to what we think our mission in this world is. So I remember in my early 30s, I did ask myself that question. I had a certain amount of education and a certain amount of experience. My education was in public health and applied spiritual psychology. I had worked for the Department of Health for a while. And by then I had had our kids who were 3 and 5, and I thought, what am I really here to do? And that's when I started to think about other kids who did not have parents. It was just so apparent to me. And I think most of us, if we, again, listen with our inner ear and we go inside and tune in, we get animated by certain things around us. And, you know, those certain things make us pause. They may give us the shivers. We may hear or see the same kind of message over and over. And I think these are the kind of signs that should get us to pause and, again, ask the deeper questions of, what am I here to do in this lifetime? How am I supposed to use the skills, the abilities, the education that I've amassed to manifest my highest potential in the world at this time? And it doesn't have, I have a service project that looks a certain way, helping Romanian and Moldovan kids who are orphaned receive a college, you know, gain a college education. But everybody's calling is a little different, but I think it's so important to be aligned with it, to ask yourself that question and to be aligned with it. And for me, it was the early 30s when everything sort of lined up, but I think it varies and it could be a little bit later. I think it's so important that you feel aligned, because otherwise I think you're drained at the end of the day and life starts losing meaning and you feel just disconnected from life. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to say it.
No, that's perfect the way you're saying it. You know, philanthropy, in my estimation, you do this amazing, wonderful work, but philanthropy can be as simple as sitting and listening to someone who has something that they have to say, who's going through something and needs someone to listen to them without judgment and just give them the sacred space to process what they're going through. Isn't it something like that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the most beautiful gifts we can receive is somebody being deeply present and authentic with us. That alone is an incredible gift. And philanthropy, believe it or not, I've come to learn after all these years, doing the work on yourself, healing yourself from whatever trauma, whatever patterns you've experienced that do not work for you anymore. This is philanthropic work too, because we are not a burden to others. We're not then a burden to family or society. So being a person who's more or less healed, I know it's a process, but who's more or less healed, who functions well, who has enough at the end of the day to give to others a little bit, but who goes through the world with this light because they've done work on themselves and they're not pulling energetically on others or taking from society without giving, just being productive and being a healed, balanced person is philanthropic, I think, for the planet.
Wonderful. Now, we touched briefly on spiritual psychology. What is spiritual psychology and what is your experience with it?
So when I took psychology classes, I took one or two in the undergraduate, and I even went back after my master's degree and attempted a PhD in psychology. I only finished the first year. But the traditional mainstream psychology, in spite of the etymology of the word, which has the word psyche as part of the word, which means spirit or soul, they really don't deal with that. They approach psychology as strictly the study of the mind and behaviors, and the soul, the spirit, is not taken into account at all. And so I was so thrilled when I found a program during my master's degree back then at Santa Monica, University of Santa Monica in Los Angeles, an accredited program that gave me a chance to learn about psychology, including our spirit, including our soul in its study. And not only that, it went beyond that. It had to be experiential. So everything we learned was based on also having the experience of something, not just theoretically learning about something. So all of the processes we did at school, the tools we learned and mastered, they were something we experienced, something we put into practice, and something we experienced in our everyday life. So I think that, let's see, I lost my train of thought for a moment there. I'll give you a quick example. During our second year in the master's degree, you know how in most master's degree you are asked to do a thesis, and we had a thesis, but we also had to do a project where we, within a nine-month period, we made an actual dream we've always had into a reality.
Yes.
So in that way, you demonstrated that you can actually apply experientially in your life these concepts, these theoretical concepts. So some of these projects were, you know, losing the 30 pounds you've always struggled to lose and you couldn't, or having your own exhibit as a painter. Maybe painting was your hobby, but you never sort of took that next step. In my case, it was getting ready on a physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual level to meet my life partner. And that's basically what I did for a nine-month period. And then it just so happened that I did meet my future husband, and we've been together for the past 25 years. But basically, we had to demonstrate in the world of the five senses and the spiritual world that we mastered what we learned, and we had to demonstrate that in our projects.
Beautiful. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Stefania Magidson. She's the author of Searching for the White Magician. Stefania, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and also find out more about your foundation.
So you can buy the book on Amazon if you just put in my name, Stefania Magidson, or the title of the book, Searching for the White Magician. And you can find out more about our foundation at www.blueheronfoundation.org. And that's heron as in H-E-R-O-N, like the bird.
And we'll be back with more of Stefania after these words on the OM Times Radio Network.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this evening is Stefania Magidson. She's the author of Searching for the White Magician, Spiritual Psychology and the Manifestation of Destiny. So before the break, we were talking about manifesting these special things in our lives. So if we are spiritual beings having a human experience and that we're equipped with the ability to choose what unfolds for us in this life, why do you suppose so many choose the darker side of what you call the continuum?
Well, I think that life is always a tango between us and the serendipitous in our life. And I think we get to choose a lot, but you know, there are also situations when things are not as clear or the options are not that great. So I think we always have to go inside and just really get attuned to how we relate to what is happening when we don't have a lot of choice. I think that the more conscious we become, I think that the more we heal, the more we are able to choose consciously, even when perhaps on the physical level it seems like the choices are not that great, we still have the choice of how we relate to what maybe destiny is placing in front of us. So I would say, why do some people choose to hover at the darker end of the continuum? It's probably a combination of sometimes life not providing us with the best options, but also how we relate to ourselves and what we end up choosing. I think that's what can lead to sort of ending at that end of the spectrum. By becoming more conscious, by healing more, by starting to make more conscious decisions that support us, patterns that support us, we start moving away from that end of the continuum into toward the other end, a more positive one, where we make choices that support us. And sometimes that's really part of my prayer, because some of the choices can be very ambiguous and the difference can be very subtle. And I'm always praying for clarity. I'm praying that I be able to distinguish what is a choice for my highest good and the highest good of all concerned. And I think we constantly clean that lens of choices. It can be a choice just to not engage with somebody in a particular conversation, or to say no to a particular contract, those type of choices. So I think the more we become conscious, which can happen through meditation and reading and inner work and surrounding ourselves with more conscious people, the more we do that, the more attuned we are to making choices that benefit and uplift us and ultimately lead us on a path and build a destiny that we are aligned with and happy with.
You know, I recently saw a film in which several of the characters gave these momentary dialogues talking about where they were in life. And one of the dialogues was by this young woman, and she said something very profound. She said that every time she felt out of balance or she felt dissonance with other people in her life, she looked inside, and wherever she found a hole, she realized that this hole was in the emptiness that was creating this dissonance. And she found that the hole was not the other person's hole, but it was her hole. It was the emptiness inside of her. And she started filling each of these holes with gratitude. And as she filled each of these holes with gratitude, it completely changed her life. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it always comes back to us, to how we relate to what's unfolding. And we project a lot too, and we can also absorb too much by what it is unfolding or projected, but we always have a choice and the chance and opportunity to show up in whatever manner we choose to, whether it's with gratitude or sending light to the person in front of us who we perceive as going through something hard. Gratitude is definitely such a beautiful quality to fill ourselves with and to imbue ourselves with. And it shifts the lens. I agree with that person's approach. It shifts the lens, and with that, our perception of reality and our experience.
What are some other ways in which we can bring more love and light into our existence, both individually and collectively?
Well, I actually have a few that have really worked for me. I've learned many different approaches, especially being connected with the school I attended 27 years ago, and a school that I've been in touch with, and I even went back for a postmaster's in consciousness, health, and healing. But of course, I have my favorites, so I'll share with you some of my favorites. I like to do freeform writing on a common basis. So sometimes I commit to 30 days in a row of half an hour a day of freeform writing. And I just start writing, and I write everything that comes to me. It's a purging process. It's the kind of writing you don't want to keep around. You want to burn or destroy after you're done doing it. But it's almost like doing a detox. You let go of so much stuff that no longer serves you. You are able to express, sometimes in even terrible terms, if that's what comes to you, whatever is present. It's a deep cleansing process, and also a process that brings you a lot of clarity. So I like to do this kind of freeform writing. It just moves me so much forward in going to the next step in my conscious awakening. Beyond that, I do a lot of dream work. This is one of my absolute most favorite tools. I think it's an incredible source of understanding of ourselves, and it enriches our life so much. Freud called the dreams the royal path to our subconscious. And I think it's this process of shedding light to what in the world is going on to this mysterious subconscious of ours. And in the dream world, our guard is down, and we really see some of our unresolved issues, some of the patterns that we are still trying to figure out and perhaps get beyond. Sometimes I have dreams that are premonitions, and sometimes I love it because they are healing. I have a lot of healing dreams. I mean, why go karmically? It's so much more expensive in quotation marks, to go through a pattern in the real life. If it's a more negative pattern, we can analyze our dreams and resolve some of that in our dreams. I think doing a service project is another way of growing and cultivating a spiritual practice. For me, it's the foundation that I run. It's sort of help carrying the torch for those who cannot do it. Right now, you know, they usually can after completing college and later on, but for a while we sort of help carry the torch for them. And it can be different for everyone, the kind of service projects that we do. It can be for a family member who's going through a hard time, working with animals, or just doing work on yourself if you feel that you're in a lot of need of growing and of healing. And it goes on and on, but these are some of my favorites.
You know, you talked about freeform writing and then ceremoniously, ritually burning the writings to let go of any feelings or negativity that may have been imbued into the writings. My wife and I, when we got married, we had both had been in previous marriages, and we did an engagement ritual in which we took rose petals and we went down to a beach, a beautiful beach by the sea, and we took each of the rose petals and we gave forgiveness and gratitude to our former partners and to those who had been formative in our lives prior to that moment of our joining together, and imbued those into the rose petals and then cast the rose petals into the sea. And in doing so, felt great liberation. And we actually, my wife and I both teach this to others, not just as an engagement ritual, but as a personal ritual, to take the time to give forgiveness and thanks also to those who have come and touched our lives in various ways, whether they were positive or negative, and then release that energy into the sea. And we find it very powerful.
Mm. What a beautiful and powerful ritual. I love that. And, you know, hand in hand with the freeform writing, and it's in a way more similar to your ritual, is the soul-to-soul letters. And these are not letters where we express our annoyance or anger with someone. These are letters, so it's another tool or ritual that you can write to a deceased loved one or to an enemy that you just can't face, or somebody with who you never seem to find the right words when you're face to face. So the soul to soul letters are yet another tool of really from your soul writing to the soul of the other person and communicating something that is deep and important that for whatever reason you couldn't communicate, whether in their lifetime or because of other reasons. But I found this to be transformational, and it's another important tool. And I, of course, I love the one that you shared. Rituals are incredible ways to cleanse, to move forward, to strengthen ourselves, to gain clarity, and really to jump to the next level of consciousness. So we need them in our lives. I'm a big lover of rituals and of tools who help us with that.
And forgiveness, the most important factor is forgiveness, both self-forgiveness and forgiveness of others.
Yes.
My guest this evening on Destination Unlimited, Stefania Magidson, Searching for the White Magician is her book, and we'll be back with more of Stefania after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on Om Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
My savings are gone.
Okay, where were they last?
Here, right before I spent them on that vacation to Aruba.
Weird. Not weird. Not saving now means no money later. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org.
brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Back on Destination Unlimited, my guest this week, Stefania Magidson. She's the author of Searching for the White Magician, Spiritual Psychology and the Manifestation of Destiny. Stefania, you state in your book that the most important question in the theme of existence pertains to its meaning. When did you first set out to try and find the answer to the meaning of existence, and have you found an answer that satisfies you personally?
Well, I think I've always looked for that. I think when I was very young, it was more of an intuitive quest. It was always with me, but I didn't have the words for it. I grew up in a very rich environment. So I didn't just grow up in Romania. I grew up in Transylvania, in a part of Transylvania that is very rich in traditions, just the backdrop of having different ethnicities to, again, different rituals, different religions, people being very open intuitively, I think. I remember my, you know, it was something that we spoke about all the time, particularly on weekends when we would wake up at the same time with our parents. It's like, what was your dream last night? Oh, Grandma so-and-so showed up in the dream and she said blah 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 blah. So dreams were a big part of our lives. My maternal grandfather was a priest, a Romanian Orthodox priest. My paternal grandmother was a very spiritual woman. My aunt painting Byzantine churches. And so the fabric of the family, the conversations were there too, but it was very rich. So in a way, I think I asked myself those questions from a very young age. I just didn't ask them formally, and perhaps I didn't have the exact words, the official words and questions, but it has been a lifelong question for me, which then, as I started to study applied spiritual psychology and read all those books that we were encouraged to read, and which actually were, you know, they were, I think I would have found them anyway, even if I hadn't attended that program, because I was meant, I think, to explore this path in this lifetime. All the books and this whole tribe that I found of other people who are on this quest, I've asked myself that question very consciously since the age of 23, but I've always asked myself that question, and it is an important question. And I think you can also ever articulate the answer, but for me now the answer is that we are here because our souls yearned to have an incarnation and to experience life in a human body and to also have the five senses. And I think we are meant to be here to relearn or to remember that we are living love and to share that with our fellow human beings. And I really think too through this book that, you know, the message is about tolerance and optimism and love ultimately. And I know it seems so hard and elusive sometimes, and sometimes even harder just with the competition and what's happening with the IT world and the digital world. It seems to pull us away, you know, the world of the senses and the world of the ego is just, it's constantly pulling us from the essence. But basically, that's why I think we're here. And I think I've always asked myself that question, and I continue to ask myself that question and refining my answer.
Mm. Don't we all refine our answer as we go?
Yeah. I agree, yes.
You talked about growing up in a culturally and religiously diverse area, the blessing of having that. What is something that you find that the varying religious and spiritual practices of the world have in common?
Yeah, so So I grew up in Romania in the milieu I just described. Then we moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, and I was surrounded by the prevalent religion there, Mormonism, which really is called Latter Day Saints. That's the, you know, the more politically correct term. Then I moved to Los Angeles, and when I married into a Jewish family who is not religious, more culturally Jewish. My mother-in-law was the only one practicing a religion, and that was Zen Buddhism. And I have a lot of friends who are Hindu and who are into the Kabbalah. And so it was very important for me. First of all, I respect all these paths and all these religions. I think being asked what's the most superior one or the right, who has the answers. And I had no choice but to look for the common threads and the common denominators and the essence, you know, in their messages. And I think that they're all good as long as we don't get trapped into dogma and fanaticism. They're all paths to God, to divinity. And to ask, you know, I would invite the listener to imagine that you are asked, if you're asked, what's the best way to get from Los Angeles to New York? And some people may say, oh, you know, by airplane, no, by car, by bus, but I like to walk, whatever. And people start arguing about the modalities where, in fact, all you want to do is to get from LA to New York. And it's sort of the same with connecting with the divine. I think the path is secondary. And I think the important thing is to get there. So the essence is to connect with the divine, and these are just tools. And meditation is a tool too. I think Ram Dass said, you don't want to become a meditator, you want to be liberated. So I think religions are tools, and I think it's important to not get trapped into dogma and fanaticism and to find the essence of them, and through rituals and through teachings that are elevated spiritually. And they're metaphorical. It's so important to remember that, to not get stuck into, you know, oh, but the Bible says Jesus walked on water. It's so important to relate to the teachings in a metaphorical way. I think all these are wonderful tools, but again, to not get trapped in dogma and fanaticism, and that my way is the only right way.
And as a student of interfaith and being an interfaith minister myself, studying all of the major religions and some of the lesser known religions and faiths of the world, at the foundation of every one of them is the same message: love one another, take care of one another.
Yes. Yeah, there it is, as simple as that.
Who were some of your spiritual mentors?
Oh, well, I really resonate with Ram Dass's teachings, just the way he phrases this whole journey. And I've always loved Yogananda, Jesus the Christ. I love Dalai Lama's message. I've never been an adept of just one person. I recognize when the message is authentic, when it comes from the heart, when it has a high vibration, when there is no agenda. And I sort of sit and marinate with that teaching. And of course, John Roger, who founded the school that happened to be the place that resonated with me at that time in my life. So I have many teachers, and I've learned from all. I don't follow just one particular one. I'm sort of not a follower. There is a part of me, I think it's part of my spiritual journey to listen, to learn, but I just don't follow just one particular teacher.
Follow your heart. Follow what your soul tells you to follow, right?
Yes.
That's the answer.
And walking your talk, really living what you're preaching, I think ultimately that's the lesson, being what you spend all this time learning or trying to become.
And speaking of walking your talk, please tell us about the Blue Heron Foundation.
So Blue Heron Foundation, I started in 2002. Our kids were 3 and 5 years old. I was so grateful they were healthy and they had everything they needed. And I thought, how about the kids I left behind in Romania? And so I went back to Romania that year, to my hometown. I went to an orphanage there, and all these little toddlers jumped into my arms and called me mama. So I guess I could say they had me at mama. So I came back knowing that I had to do something for them. And it's when I started the organization. And 3 years later, I switched from helping toddlers to only helping youth from 18 to 25 years of age, Romanian and Moldovan, who don't have parents, who are in the system, and who needed and were able to pursue a college degree. So we've been paying for their college degree all these years. We pair them up with mentors. We do summer camps. And we see them graduate as doctors, as engineers, as teachers and social workers. And we see them break the cycle of poverty and abandonment. We are just so proud to see that they are able to manifest their highest dreams, and that their horrid past, in many cases, is not their future. They are able to forge a new destiny. So that's, and 100% of donations go to the organization, because luckily the founders are able to cover all expenses. So we make the dollars go a really long way.
Stefania, thank you so much, not only for joining us this week, but also for sharing your story and the wonderful generosity of spirit that you give so generously and freely to others. Thank you so much for all of that.
Thank you so much, Victor. This has been a pleasure and an honor, and I so appreciate the opportunity to share this message with your listeners.
And her book is called Searching for the White Magician, and as she mentioned, all the proceeds from the sale of the book go to the Blue Heron Foundation. Stefania, thank you. It was wonderful meeting you and speaking with you this evening.
Thank you very much, Victor.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.